being an entrepreneur, your company fails, it's a huge black mark, unlike Silicon Valley where people write a Medium post about it and get, you know, get all sorts of praise, and your imagery is of just a bunch of not diverse founders, then it's not super exciting to a you know, a single mom entrepreneur. They didn't necessarily have that type of profile, but now they're doing fantastic work all around the world.
Hi folks, welcome to episode 7 of Fund BMC. I'm super excited to have my friend Christine Tsai from 500 Startups. Many of you know her as the face of 500. I know her from way back when, probably 9.5, 10 years ago, as the founding partner. So, Christine, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
How did we get connected?
I think one of the other mentors connected us.
Okay, so it was from the network. Yeah.
It was like early, like
maybe. I like hearing about this now, like 10 years later, like what did Hong go through?
Yeah, I want to say it's like the first 10 or 20 people when you had like the mentors.
That were
like the
mentor program.
The mentor program. So I got called because I was like this startup recruiter.
Yeah.
And a lot of the companies going through the program would be getting funding after demo day, they'd be hiring. And I think I was the only partner, the only mentor that did recruiting specifically. Mm-hmm. So I was a resident mentor. I showed up at the office a lot, hung out with the early crew. Mm-hmm. And actually Van, our partner on this Fund BMC, was batch zero.
Yes.
So batch zero is like before the program technically started, right?
Yeah, it was the guinea pig batch.
Yeah, yeah. They tested a lot on these guys. And where are you now, batch 25?
We're on batch 26.
26.
Yeah, a lot of batches.
A lot of batches. And total portfolio, like how many companies?
The portfolio is now, this may actually even be off, but it's over 2,500 companies, I think. So 2,500 companies spans about 75 countries around the world. Cool. And 16 unicorns that we speak about. There's probably more that 16. We can't talk about, but definitely quite a big breadth and depth into countries. But I actually feel like now in this kind of new decade for 500, going deeper into markets and even covering markets we haven't, because it's only 75 countries. There's a lot more ground to cover.
Wow, only 75 countries.
Yeah.
There's about 190 countries in the world. So it's about 50% of the world.
50%.
Still more work to do.
Yeah.
And then 2,500 companies. That's amazing. Because again, early days, we used to joke, like, we're calling it 500 startups. Like, that's really ambitious.
Yeah.
Again, this is like inside baseball a little bit. Back in the day when it was starting, it was sort of like, I don't know if you can talk about this, it was like 500 versus YC. It had that dynamic because we were both in Mountain View. Mm-hmm. They had a different program. It was more like, I don't know, almost like college. I felt like it was a little bit more like rigid, and they had like an application process that was like they only selected certain people. Mm-hmm. And 500 was more like we're gonna go around the world and look for great mm-hmm. founders everywhere. Mm-hmm. Does that still hold true?
I think in the Valley, there's probably naturally from the market, they're always looking for some kind of comparison. So mm-hmm. when they think of accelerators, they'll of course think of YC, and YC doesn't even like to call themselves an accelerator, but they'll think 500 and YC, and it's a natural comparison. Yeah. Honestly, we are very, very different. Oh. So it's hard to compare, especially given our focus. Certainly we're here in Silicon Valley, and that's still very mm-hmm. important, but our mission is quite global. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of things that the way we invest, programs we do that are just very different from YC. I mean, mm-hmm. we've invested in a lot of YC companies, sure. and there's a lot of back and forth with like some of our companies have gone to YC. So, yeah. I mean, philosophically, I'm probably like, well, you know, they're very respectful of what they do, mm-hmm. and we're just different. But yeah, people definitely yeah. in the early days, and then even to this day, it's always like. They just like to create these stories. It makes me think of the NBA, where they kind of create these like
the rivalries.
Yeah. And then when you talk to the players, they're probably fans. A little bit, but they're like,
yeah. yeah. I think part of what I like about 500, and we still call it 500 family, is that you do fund people, or you believe in people that do not necessarily have the perfect background or the perfect pedigree, mm-hmm. or like just have the right look, unfortunately, in the Valley. Mm. How do you think about that from the early days and now with the successes of these companies? It's kind of validating that model. And now everybody's saying they're doing the same thing.
I think in the early days for 500, the reason why it was probably easier for us to have that sort of mentality in backing people or hiring people was because we probably felt like that ourselves. Now, interestingly, back then, going into investing or starting a fund as an operator and using that as your differentiator that you had an operating background or actually had that kind of experience, it was kind of a more of a novel thing. I think now everybody has, like, every VC, especially every early stage VC, used to work at Facebook or something, right? Or was a founder. So it's kind of now table stakes at this point. But back then it was something we definitely used as a differentiator in terms of we've actually worked at tech companies. We have operating experience. We have that network and how to actually help companies. I know for me, even though I came from Google, it wasn't like I came from Google and it was so easy, right? I still felt like it was like a new game to play in terms of, I actually came in, I didn't have much investment experience. And so, what I had was certainly the operating experience and just being in tech for a long time, but in terms of investments and all of that, it wasn't really, it was something that I had to learn. And for me, venture was something that was exciting more from the perspective of working with the companies versus running a fund, fundraising for a fund, learning how to what is your investment thesis and your model to actually at the end of the day make returns for your LPs and managing the portfolio. So a lot of that is even to this day, like it's the learning curve and just like the feedback loop is so long. Like we're coming up on now 10 years for our first fund. And so we're starting to see the results there, and same for fund two, fund three, and so on. And now we're, on our fifth fund. But yeah, going back to what you were asking, it was always kind of in our, seeing that talent exists in all shapes, colors, forms, languages. It certainly was, I don't know, to us, it felt like a no-brainer, especially in terms of what probably most of Sand Hill Road would look at, which is not that.
Right.
And so we sort of would jokingly say it's arbitrage we're going to be able to get into these great deals that others will pass up because they don't look right, or they're going after a market that no one understands. And we have a number of examples in the portfolio where that's the case. We certainly have a lot of examples of our team members, all of our fund managers around the world, all of our GPs. They probably all fall into that bucket where they aren't necessarily they didn't necessarily have that type of profile, but now they're doing fantastic work all around the world.
One of the best founders I've ever had the pleasure of meeting. And this team was crazy. It was like, do you remember Ray Chan and those guys?
Oh yeah.
It was like these five, I think it was five of them. They were just crazy. They would like literally spin up a new startup every week. And they're just experimenting like crazy, just doing all kinds of stuff. They pitch with one company and then they like raise. And then I think like in the program, they did like three or four other companies.
Yeah.
And they finally landed on 9GAG, right?
Yeah.
And 9GAG at the time was like this new sort of social sharing platform. Grew huge numbers mostly, and now it's, I think they're based in Hong Kong, right?
Yeah, they're in Hong Kong.
So it's like an Asia company, and now we see these chat apps, like, all the new chat apps, TikToks and things like that just have exponential growth in Asia and have just ridiculous amount of users almost seemingly overnight. So I think of 9GAG and I think of Ray, like one of these first of a type, right? And I will say, like, I remember their pitch, and people in the crowd were sort of making, these comments like, I can't even understand these guys.
Oh really?
Yeah, I remember who said it too. So
you're gonna hold that for later.
Yeah,
another time.
So why the international focus? Because again, you said maybe it was an arbitrage initially, but now it's also, it looks very prescient, right? You were so smart to invest in international startups back when the Valley was the nexus of all of this, and investing, outside the Valley was sort of like looked down upon. And out of your portfolio, there's a lot of international companies. I don't know what percent, probably 30 or 40%.
It's getting closer and closer to half. Yeah.
And out of the 16 unicorns, probably
almost half of them are from overseas. Half. Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot. And you invested in these companies way back when. Like, you're not a later stage company that kind of comes in and takes credit for Unicorn.
Yeah. I mean, typically we're investing early. There's always some exceptions here and there, but even when we are investing a bit later outside of our thesis, it's probably still considered early stage. Yeah. Like, we're not entering a company at Series E or something, right? So, but yeah, the focus on global, it was from the early days, and it was definitely, like you said, very contrarian view in terms of what kind of talent is there outside of Silicon Valley.
Yes.
The concept of just, not the concept purely, but just VC and startups, it was very much tied to Silicon Valley, and probably for, at the time, probably good reason, because that was where most of the activity was. There was obviously startups coming from all around the world, but the ecosystems there were just certainly like much more nascent. And so to make that bet saying, we're going to invest outside of Mountain View and invest outside of the US, there were just a lot of skeptics. But we felt like, you know, the world is changing. There is that fundamental belief we have in terms of what our mission is and what we're building 500 for, and that talent exists all around the world. And we're going to find the best founders. Many of them probably want to go global anyway. And so we had that, we had that conviction early on. And now in 2020, I was going to say 2019, I forgot. But now in 2020, it's, as you know, like, it's a completely different world, both in terms of venture, entrepreneurship, unicorn birthing countries, and where capital is flowing, and even just like actual products people use in terms of just daily, like just daily platforms, like distribution is so much easier. And in many ways, it's, in some cases, there are very much region, country specific tool, like platforms. Obviously China is one thing, but there's so many things, you know, at a very basic, like Facebook, Instagram, that's used all over the world, and sometimes the highest usage is in these other markets, and and so many of these other markets are growing so much faster than the US. You know, Southeast Asia is more than 500 million people, and most of them are under 30. Like, that's a huge market, and just the adoption of tech and the growth that's happening in these markets is like, you would, it's a no-brainer to try to take advantage of them, advantage of that as a VC. But still, it is hard to wrap your head around, especially if you just have no context for that market, you don't get it. So it's understandable why VCs wouldn't, they'd be hesitant to invest in a market they just know nothing about. But I do think that us having made that bet early, I feel quite proud that we did. And I feel like now where 500 is going is just only going to go deeper. I actually often say to our team, we've made, you know, like, we talked about the numbers, and but now in this, I like to have this idea of this, you know, new decade, new chapter. We're only going to go lean in even further.
But I think it brings up a point, which is like, 500 started in Mountain View, it was a Valley fund, of course, but you started having these, I would say, what, local funds or regional funds, like Durian, Korea. Southeast Asia is a huge region, as you had mentioned. You probably have a couple of unicorns there, like Grab, Canva. I don't know if you put them in Southeast Asia. I can't say this one.
Bukalapak.
But I remember also when Grab was starting, nobody wanted to invest in them because it was a copycat, right? It was deemed as like, oh, they're just trying to become like an Uber. And Uber, I think, was operating in that
in
region,
Southeast Asia,
and they couldn't, like, they didn't figure it out. They didn't know the cultural differences. There was no like Uber moped, right? Like all these regional advantages that Grab had, founders being there, growing up there, they destroyed Uber. I think Uber kind of left with its tail between its legs. So that regional formula or that regional approach does work. Now we all know it works. How do you think about spinning up these different regions? Like, do you look for kind of a nexus city or something like that that you think will be a new hub, and then you find the people to build the ecosystem around it?
The way we've built it over the course of 500 has been, it has been a combination of, a lot of it certainly has been driven by people that we have had the fortune of meeting through all our travels, and many of them became what are now our the GPs of these funds, and really being flying the 500 flag for Middle East, Latin America, Korea, I always leave one off. Southeast Asia, like Istanbul, everywhere. So, so it's definitely been a lot of talent driven. So without that real true, like boots on the ground, local person, it's like you said, it's very hard to do. There's that plus investing into the region, even from Silicon Valley. So long before we even had a lot of that team, we were going out and taking bets on these founders, either convincing them to come to Mountain View for 4 months and doing our accelerator, or just investing there internationally. So a lot of learnings we've had in terms of just investing in different jurisdictions, spinning up funds in different markets, and learning a lot about that. And plus, just what are the both cultural nuances of different markets, as well as the dynamics of the overall ecosystem. Because what we have found is that there's great founders everywhere, like the talent is everywhere, but everything that's necessary to make it a sustainable ecosystem in that market it's trails, right? So early stage capital is almost always deficient in every market. Most of these, there's money everywhere, but not a lot want to allocate it to anything that's like an alternative, let alone venture capital, let alone early stage seed stage venture capital. So many of these founders have had to either just scrape by or figure out how to fund themselves, or they just don't even do it because societal pressure is go work at a big company, something safe. Being an entrepreneur, your company fails, it's a huge black mark, unlike Silicon Valley, where people write a Medium post about it and get, you know, get all sorts of praise and, you know, they're there, but it's just not like that everywhere else. I would say it's improving for sure. I think a lot of governments around the world have realized and really bought into entrepreneurship, and tech is really the future for us. And these decisions and investment have to be made now, not when it's too late. And it's something that is a transformation over the course of 10, 20 years. And so you already see a lot more endorsement coming from governments, corporates, in terms of trying to get into tech. Some do it better than others. But it's still there's still a ways to go, I think. Because when you think of Silicon Valley, it's had the benefit of 30, 40 years to develop into this. So everything we talk about, the different stages of capital sources, the resources, the corporates that acquire, everything is all there. In other markets, they're trying to kind of jumpstart and accelerate that. And but sometimes it's going to just take time. And of course, these companies getting to that unicorn status and they're sustainable or not, them having some kind of liquidity event, and then they create this new era of angel investors. So all of that stuff, it's something that Silicon Valley has. Other markets don't have that yet, but we're starting to see some of that, certainly in Southeast Asia and in parts of Asia. Other markets will follow, hopefully. But every market has a different playbook, I think. So I think our approach for each market is different. So Africa would be a different approach than maybe a more developed market like India. And even India, it's, you know, a lot of people think of it as quite developed. It's still like, there's just still rapidly growing.
Depends on, it's almost a city by city basis.
Exactly. And it's so, you know, we ignorant Americans think of it as like India, but India is like, you know, there's culturally so different depending where you are. It's like Europe.
I mean, landmass wise, population size, like total. addressable market, whatever you want
to call it. It's a huge market,
huge place. In recruiting, they talk about diversity and inclusion a lot, and they complain about pipeline problem because we're not getting these applicants. It's like, well, you don't think about it at the level of like, why are we not getting these applicants? Because the system's only set one way for certain types of people. So yeah, I don't know if you want to talk about diversity in that sense, or do you want to talk more about as a female founder yourself, how difficult it is today, even though a lot of VCs are giving lip service to this and saying they fund female founders. I think there's a little difference between like being a CEO and being kind of one of the three founders, right? How do you think about that in terms of like, do you actively look for female founders? Do you encourage more women to start companies? Or do you sort of get a naturally more varied deal flow because of how 500 was built?
I would say it's a combination of all of those. So I think I don't think there's necessarily a pipeline problem in terms of there's not enough qualified people, but certainly if you look at it from that perspective, there are many points in that path where say women or diverse candidates, but we'll just talk about women because we're just for this purpose, is that they maybe opt out or drop out for many reasons. So it's not that there aren't enough good people. It's that whatever the system is or whatever path they're on, they opt out or they drop out because either they can't get ahead or they're not getting the opportunity. So I think certainly addressing that is key, and just continuing to encourage, even from an early age, that is something girls can do. And I actually, just as a parent, seeing that there's a huge, it may be specific to where we live, but there's certainly no shortage of encouragement from parents, from the school, that coding and those types of things are not just for boys, right? So I don't think it's like that everywhere in the world, but there's that aspect in terms of proactively going after diverse founders. I think that's key, because when you think of online applications, like especially something that's on a platform like an AngelList, or you choose the platform, you need to think about, well, why aren't we getting more diverse candidates? Is it because the diverse candidates don't really use that platform, or is there something about the application that's turning them off? Like sometimes when we promote accelerator applications, or anything about when there's a batch in cycle, we try to think about, make sure we're mindful of the language that's used, the imagery, not that that's like the savior for everything, but those types of details, candidates are of course going to notice. Cause if you send out marketing emails and it's like, you're crushing it and ping pong, or I don't know, stuff that just doesn't, people don't identify with, that aren't like young male dropouts from college dropouts. And your imagery is of just a bunch of not diverse founders, then it's not super exciting to a single mom entrepreneur that wants to go through this, and they see that and they're like, I'm not going to identify with them, or it's not going to be a good experience for me. So, so that plus kind of really proactively even marketing to diverse pools. So there's that, certainly going on the ground, proactively recruiting. I think just putting a lot more of that effort in and realizing that it's worth that investment to do, to find those types of founders. Because as much as people think that these programs, they just sit there and wait for applications to come in, I know, and I think we all know, that great deals are hunted, even by the best investors. They go after these founders. And so if you look at it from that perspective, you're really going to hunt and look for these great founders, great diverse companies. Then it's all part of the job of being a good investor. So, and then in terms of, do you naturally attract that type of deal flow if you have a diverse team? Certainly. Of course, in an ideal world, even in evaluating deals, you would hope that you don't have to be, say, that target audience to really understand it, but there's probably some element of it. And maybe founders will feel more comfortable approaching a female partner or an African-American partner. Or just knowing that, they understand, like they have that diversity on the other side of the table. It feels like a place that I would want to take money from. So I think it's all these discussions about diversity and inclusion. Oftentimes they focus on a narrow aspect. And I think that's kind of the mistake that a lot of investors make when they think, oh, we need to be more diverse. Let's hire a diverse partner. But what fails to happen is, setting that person up for success, and it really being part of the firm's ethos in terms of how they look at deals, how they talk to founders, how they treat founders, their LPs that they bring in. So it's a multifaceted issue, I think. Yeah. But if anything, it's good that there's more attention on it. I think, like you said, there's still quite a ways to go, though.
Yeah, there is. Kind of watch the VC, and I work with VCs a lot, so I'm not going to say anything too egregious here. But there's now been a trend to hire more female VCs, and a lot of them may come up through the ranks of being like a junior partner or associate somewhere, and sort of shuffling chairs on Sand Hill, because it's the same people. They go from fund to fund, but I think you're one of the few, probably only a handful of female VCs who started the firm, which is a totally different thing. Like for me as a founder, I have much more respect for starting something than for someone to join like a big firm, right? Like you can get those jobs because you have the right pedigree, you know the right people, you were at the right company at the right time and all that stuff. But starting from scratch is, I think, a lot more difficult. There's only a few, I'd say there's only a few female VCs that started their own fund.
Yeah,
probably less than 10.
Yeah, and some of them are like fantastic ones, and they've gone on to raise second and third funds, and hopefully they will then become kind of the forces in terms of, I mean, a lot of them are relatively new, as in maybe in the last 10 years, but I think certainly seeing more female or diverse like founded firms and those becoming very successful, plus the existing storied VCs recruiting more of a diverse bench. It's in some ways it can be harder to change existing infrastructure versus starting from anew. Sure. I mean, I think about this purely in terms of just like cities being built, because when we go travel around the world, you see so much new construction in a lot of different markets, and then we're here in San Francisco thinking, why is it taking, like, why does stuff take so long, right? But it's so much easier to build from new.
Maybe. And
anything that is already there to change it and to try to convince people, it's a mess. So I can see why it's probably harder for these very established firms to change even their brand or their perception to be, to try to recruit a more diverse bench. But hopefully it'll get there.
Yeah, I think it will. It might take another year.
We have found, at least so far, it's been actually pretty consistent. And for early stage, which is the riskiest, it's harder to do. So I think what we've decided, at least with this new fund that we're working on, is really kind of taking advantage of all of the infrastructure we've built in terms of our global portfolio. We have a huge portfolio to pick from and really try to invest in what we think are the breakouts. So it's a bit of a different strategy, but we're going to continue to be early stage and still backing those founders. Just now shifting a bit with our new fund in terms of, essentially, I like to call it like eating in our own restaurant for once. it's just, a lot of it is, I think, as an investor, just being nimble and kind of being able to, if early, like as an example, like early days, we probably would have said, we don't really invest in a certain sector, and then that changes because maybe that sector starts to evolve and cross over more with software. But I think that we do invest in a lot of companies, but we do also reject way more. So I think it's a lot of learnings. Yeah, like a lot of learnings we've had.
Yeah. But you should still apply. Do you want to talk about like the application cycles? Do you still do batches like every 6 months kind of thing?
Yeah. So our batch is currently in session, so I think they're going to start recruiting pretty soon. This batch has been a couple months in, and it's been great to have them in the office. Batch 26. But we do online applications, but I think what we do also is we do try to source quite a bit from our own network and do a lot of outreach.
Yeah. And now there's a ton of 500 founders out there.
Yeah, that's actually been great.
Family.
Yeah.
So you're getting
good referrals.
A lot of good referrals. Yeah. Really good deal flow from the network. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's what everybody dreams of. That's what recruiters do. So it's still 500.co if people want to apply.
It'll definitely be linked from 500.co or we'll tweet about it. Yep. So any of our social media will have it for sure.
And I get the sense that you're too humble to do this. So I'm gonna hype it up. The thing I like about 500 over other programs, let's just say, is I feel like at the earliest stage as a founder, it's hard to get money. It's hard to fundraise. Let's not kid ourselves. But if you have a good business, you can get money from a lot of people. When that's off the table, meaning like you have a lot of options for where you can raise from, I feel like it's the value that I see from the founders that I work with at 500 is that you believe in people. And I think that's the key thing for me as a recruiter and building companies for other people. It's like you have to believe in people, and you sort of take a chance on people sometimes because they might not be the perfect founder. But as a founder myself, I think that's way more important than the money. I think that's there's so much value there. And, the founder journey is hard. You've gone through ups and downs yourself with 500. And in those really dark times, which every founder will go through, I think it's really important to know who's in your corner
mm-hmm.
and to have people who believe in you,
mm-hmm.
not just in your business or not just in your business model or not just in like you found some viral loop to make money. So that's all I'll say about 500. So if you're starting a company and you're interested and you're international, like it's even better, definitely talk to Christine and her team, apply to the program. Yeah, so this has been a pleasure. It's so great to see you. It feels like it's been years, but then again, it feels like it hasn't been any time since we last chatted.
I mean, you look the same.
Yeah, you do too.
Asians don't reason.
Thank you. Asians don't reason. Yeah, so Christine Tsai, the youngest VC in the Valley, only 23.
Oh, they, yeah.
Has been doing this for 10 years. Wish you the best of luck for the next 10 years.
Thank you.
Let me know how I can help.
I will.
If I can ever be helpful.
Awesome.
And definitely like take a look at 500. They have an amazing portfolio. They have an amazing team here that not just Christine, but the core team here that
yeah.
surrounds her. It's just a lot of people that I've known for a very long time. So I wholeheartedly endorse this program. If you want to start a company and you don't necessarily have a unicorn exit yet, you want the best investors you can get at the early stage. So. Thank you again.
Thank you.
All right.